Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys. Well, from now racially tolerant Salt Lake City, Utah,
it's Thank God I'm Atheist,
the podcast.
I'm Frank.
And you're confused.
And I'm a confused Frank.
He didn't like the racially tolerant comment. It's a reference to something we'll be talking about later on.
Yeah, and who are you?
I'm Dan. Doesn't matter. They know who I am.
Oh,
all y'all
goodness.
Know me.
Well, like Dan was saying, later on in the episode, we are going to be talking about race and, the Mormon Church. Race in the Mormon Church.
The Mormons.
So, there was a big development this week. Even about race in the Mormon Church, but on sort of, it has strange implications. They kind of clarified some stuff about their blacks and the priesthood and all that. But by so doing, they actually kind of changed themselves somehow.
Wormkins are opening.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that.
Yes.
But of course, first we have
other things.
Other things that we
want to
get
to. We have various and sundry bits of information to impart to you. Our
tidbits.
Our little listeners. Our cute little listeners.
Little stories.
Little stories.
Articles.
Yeah.
Things that we found in the news this week.
So what's in the news for you, Franklin?
Well, this one popped up, and I thought it was kind of an interesting, fun thing. The Scientologists.
Yeah. I've heard of them.
Yeah, you know, they sort of suffer from this question of legitimacy as a religious organization.
As a religion, yeah.
In the United States, they have religious status.
They do.
And because we have really highly tolerant laws about
religion.
And
because they intimidated people into making them.
Let's face it, it's pretty easy to be a religion in the United States.
It is, but you'll recall that they did, like, threaten people in the IRS until it happened.
Well, yeah, okay. There was that.
But also, if Flying Spaghetti Monster can be a real church here,
then anybody.
Scientologists can be a real church here.
Well, this is a story that comes to us from the UK. There was a woman, Louisa Hodkin, who launched a lawsuit after officials refused to register a Scientology chapel as a place for marriage.
Oh.
So this ends up going to the Supreme Court in the UK. And they have declared Scientology, quote, a place of meeting for religious worship.
Oh, good.
And part of this is that the judges said that religions don't require a god.
Right. That's the big hang up for these guys is that they don't have a particular god.
Right.
They've got like space aliens who like invade your body and who blew up in a volcano. And
I hate it when I get invaded.
Oh, you are just full of it. You have Thetans running through you like a crazy person.
Yeah, I can't even get near an E-meter. I just destroy E-meters.
Yeah.
They just blow up when I walk in the
room.
It's so true.
We're crawling with them.
Oh, it's sick. It's sad.
I actually like
up on it.
Like, no, I actually enjoy it. I feel like I'm never alone. Everywhere I go, I've
your
got...
Your Thetan friends.
I feel like they're my warm comforters.
Like, this Thetan, like a whole civilization of Thetans inside of me.
I am host to a glory, a group of people, a whole shitload of aliens inside of me.
Yeah, it's great.
I love it.
I love it too. I feel like it's how God intended it.
Wait a minute. we're crossing our streams here. Theological terms.
What? No.
Maybe that's what we need.
What?
We don't need E-meters and like auditing. We need Ghostbusters, Thetan Busters to shoot their proton packs at our Thetans.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah, well, you get on that, Dan.
Okay, I'll call Venkman.
All right. Well, that's basically the story.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot left to that story. But it's just interesting, you know, like
Scientologists,
because a lot of nations have really fought it. Like, I know Germany doesn't recognize Scientology as a legitimate, you know, religion.
And one wonders what this opens the door to in the UK. Like, does this mean that the what do they call it? The something assembly? the atheist group that now meets as a church.
Possibly. The article that I read said that it might actually pave the way for Jedi marriages.
Yes.
Hey.
Yes. You know, I once dated a woman who, in her first marriage, marched down the aisle to Darth Vader's theme.
Oh my God.
She really did. You met her.
Who?
Heather.
No, she didn't.
She did.
She did?
She marched down the aisle in her first marriage to the Darth Vader theme.
She seems far more conventional than that.
No, she was nutty.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I mean, I guess it didn't bode well for the marriage.
No. Clearly not. Well, that's fantastic. I did not know that about her.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to take us to San Diego, California, which when I was a kid, I thought was San Diego, California.
Mm, I love Eggos.
Right?
Lego my Eggos.
Little Sandy waffle action. One of the more prominent parts of San Diego is Mount Soledad. It's a hill in San Diego.
Yeah.
And atop this hill.
It's a mount.
It's a mount.
Uh-huh. It's in its name.
Yeah. It's in La Jolla. And it's at the top of it is a memorial to soldiers.
Oh, okay.
However,
is it sort of the highest point?
Yeah, it's kind of it's right up there. It's the Veterans Memorial.
Okay.
But it's technically the Veterans Memorial Cross.
And
it's on government land. This cross.
Oh,
so we have
herein lies the issue.
A bit of a problem, right? So the ACLU has been fighting it on behalf of the Jewish veterans of the United States. So yeah, I kind of get it. If it's a veterans memorial, and you got a bunch of Jews,
already a problem
under a cross, bit of an issue.
Yeah,
I think that's legitimate myself.
Yeah.
Plus, I think just fighting a cross is legitimate.
Yeah, but they're but getting the work done for the rest of us.
This is the extra.
Well, not, I'm not.
This
veteran,
adds that extra little oomph of legitimacy. That extra. It's like the butter on the bread. It's the jam.
It's not atheists fighting against it.
Right.
It's another religious group, and supposedly
we're
pluralistic and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So, yes, they've filed the suit, and a U.S. district judge has now ordered that the cross be removed.
Oh, cool.
Within 90 days.
Okay.
Which he then said, but if you're going to appeal, then we'll stay that.
Right. Well, yeah.
So I assume an appeal is forthcoming.
So how long have they been fighting to make this happen?
The original lawsuit was filed in 2006.
Okay.
Though I imagine that the fight has been going on for much longer than that. The cross that was placed there. I have it here somewhere. I don't know when it was.
Did you say
it was a while ago?
Was it specifically for any war, or was it just sort of a general veterans memorial?
I literally lost the page like that had all of that on
like
it.
The Vietnam Veterans Memorial or anything like that.
The cross, it was used for Easter celebrations in the early 1900s and became a memorial to Korean War veterans in the 50s. It's been there for a long time.
So it wasn't even put up as a memorial.
Right.
Oh, get rid of that damn thing.
Although...
No questions asked.
Having a historical base behind it has been what has kept certain monuments up in judgments. Mm,
really?
This case, but in other judgments around the country,
like
before,
what? Like the one up in Montana, wasn't that part of the big Jesus in the mountains?
That's right.
It was the Jesus on a slope,
on a ski slope.
Yeah.
So he's up there, and he gets to stay because he has historical precedent.
Right.
There's some things in when I was reading about the Oklahoma thing, the Satanists in Oklahoma. There was something about. The argument was going to be that the Ten Commandments had historical significance to Oklahomans.
These are the Satanists who are wanting to put up their own monument.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The Temple of Satan people. Anyway, and we'll talk about them a little later.
They're coming up later.
Anyway.
How could we not?
I mean, it's certainly nowhere near the cross that we saw in Groom, Texas.
No.
But it's, you know, it's like,
there are a few.
It's 43 feet tall.
So well, that's
it's
a good.
It's not small.
No, it's what, a 4-story building?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I mean, it's and you know, it's got a gorgeous view.
Yeah.
Nice ocean view.
Oh well, it's in La Jolla.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd have to.
Right.
Beautiful.
Know,
beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Place.
Yeah. You want to go there?
Gorgeous.
Frankly, I just want to climb up to the top of the cross. That's where the good view is.
Yeah.
Up on top.
If maybe there could be a compromise. if they allow people to climb it for the view.
Right, exactly.
Then it can stay.
Then it can stay. As long as they call it the no longer the cross, but the viewing platform.
Platform.
It must be extended with benches.
Lovely. Yep. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Well, there you go.
I came across this article this week. About a startling new book, according to this article. Startling.
Oh, I'm sure it's
startling.
Terribly startling.
And we get into trouble when we bring up books that we haven't read, but nonetheless, I'm going to. I'm saying that it exists.
Okay. And that there's something that someone has claimed is startling?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's the title of the book is Who's Bigger? Where Historical Figures Really Rank.
Oh.
Hey.
As in the Beatles claim that they were bigger than Jesus?
Maybe. written by the two authors of the book are Stephen Sciana and Charles B. Ward.
Okay.
And they used culturometrics.
Oh.
Which is a way to say that they use quantitative data analysis applied to individuals in society. So it's the same way that you might like, well, anyways, I don't fully understand how the whole thing works, but anyways, or how they were doing this, but nonetheless, they came to find that sort of in all of, internationally, culturally, blah, blah, blah. The big person is Jesus. The number one big person is Jesus. And this
take
is
that,
on...
Beatles. Suck it, John Lennon.
Well, yeah, and none of the Beatles even show up in the anywhere.
Yeah.
From as far as I know. I have the top 10 in front of me, and I tried really hard to find the full 100 list.
Uh-huh.
I think it's like in the book.
You have to buy the book.
You have
for
to
that.
Buy the book.
You gotta go to the book.
The top 10, they have released the top 10
to
get a good conversation going.
Right.
Jesus is number one.
Oh, good.
Napoleon is number two.
Wow.
Napoleon.
Good for you, Napoleon.
Yeah. Where
conquered the world and the internet.
So here are some names that appear in the top 10.
Yeah.
I'd like you to try to rank them.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I love quizzes.
You do love quizzes.
Okay. All right. Where do you think... Actually, let's do in relation to each other. Who ranks higher? Okay.
Okay.
Abraham Lincoln or George Washington?
Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Lincoln is number five and George Washington is number six.
Okay.
Let's see. Adolf Hitler or William Shakespeare?
Oh, that's got to go to Hitler.
No, William Shakespeare.
Shakespeare
number
beats
four.
Him out?
Yeah.
Good job, Willie boy.
Hitler is number seven.
Oh, okay.
Aristotle versus Alexander the Great.
I'm going Aristotle on that.
Yeah,
one.
You're right. You're
I'm
right.
going Aristotle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Alexander the not quite as great
and
as Aristotle.
I know, right? Yeah. How about Thomas Jefferson versus Muhammad?
Oh, damn. Okay, so we're obviously skewing very Western.
Uh-huh.
We're skewing.
You've picked up on that fact. Yes.
I mean, because this is mind
European.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm going to go Jefferson.
No.
Oh, okay.
Muhammad.
Okay.
Number three. Muhammad was number three.
Muhammad's,
after
I mean,
Napoleon.
There's billions of followers of Muhammad, but...
He's gonna show up.
But
he's
I mean,
gonna be mentioned.
I guess I was thinking that, like, you try to go to what literature they're mining for this. You
yeah,
know what I
and,
mean?
And see, that's the thing. They're mining, specifically, one of their big places they were looking was Wikipedia, which has caused there to be a little bit of criticism.
What?
Of their
How is this possible? Who could criticize that? It is, everyone knows it's the most perfect of all the
But in order to do this, they assessed more than 800,000 names.
Okay.
And then they calculated scores of celebrity and achievement or gravitas. And then they factored in how long and how long ago someone lived. I don't know why how long they lived is... Although I guess if they lived a short amount of time and they have serious duration, that says that speaks strongly to that person's ability to like, get their meme out there, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah. It of course, one hates to naysay... But but clearly this is all bullshit anyway. Like, it's the most subjective thing on the planet. They're like, we've come up with what we think are good criteria, so we win, and Jesus wins.
Two nerdy white guys decide to get together and figure out who the most prominent Westerners are. Because, I mean, because seriously, like, I was like, well, who would be, like, a really prominent... Chinese figure.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, we kind of tossed around Mao, but the real one is Confucius.
Sure.
Confucius should be like all over this thing.
Right.
Billions of people have followed and or read his.
Talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, every Chinese person today still would talk about him.
Yeah.
Whether or not, I mean, yeah.
They have centers of Confucian studies. I mean, this is like an outreach program that the Chinese embassy uses in this country to kind of promote Chinese-ishness.
So are they, and so, I mean, one wonders if these guys are literally just sticking with English Wikipedia.
No, you know, and they not, only looked at English.
Like, they're not looking at, like, other language Wikipedia.
No, even though there are such wonderful tools as Google Translate that probably would have helped them achieve.
Yeah.
There was a way to figure to do this.
No.
Have it truly.
They're not interested in that. Nope. They want to know who wins the Eurocentric internet.
Yeah.
And so Jesus won the internet, huh?
Jesus won. Yeah, he's big.
There you go. He's bigger than Jesus. Oh, wait, no. He's the same size as Jesus. He is him.
Oh, but there were some other interesting figures. Okay, so other tidbits that are important about this whole thing.
Okay.
Only three women wound up in the top 100.
Of course they did. Because women don't do any. Because women are busy cooking so that these men can achieve things.
Would you like to take a guess? Just to continue.
As to who the three women are?
Yeah.
I'm going to go, you need your, Joan of Arc.
Yes.
There's going to be an American in there. I'm going to say.
Emily Post?
Betsy Ross? No. Susan Anthony?
No.
I don't know.
There are no American.
No American.
Women.
Oh, okay. Mary?
No? No, I know, right?
Mary?
You would think. But no. Queen Elizabeth I.
Oh, okay.
She's number 13.
Okay.
Queen Victoria, number 16. And Joan of Arc, number 95.
Oh, yeah.
On the list. Pretty far down. Yeah. And then...
because she was nuts.
President Obama was not in the top 100.
Well, yeah. He needs more time.
He needs a little bit more time. I said no Virgin Mary in the top 100.
Mm.
She was number 127.
Okay.
On the list. So she did get, she was in there.
It's like an honorable mention.
But King Arthur, who may not have existed,
right,
was number 85.
Yeah, he pulled that sword from the stone.
I know. Elvis Presley, number 69. Martin Luther, number 17. He was just above Joseph Stalin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is Joseph Smith on there?
You know what? Joseph Smith did hit the list. Where was this? Number 57.
Wow. Good.
That's impressive.
Way to go,
actually.
Joe.
Yeah.
How about Hubbard?
L. Ron?
Yeah.
Let me do a quick search. Nope.
No. Okay.
So, yeah.
There you go.
Huh. Yeah, crazy.
Mormons beat Scientologists. That's a fact. It is now a fact.
Yeah, but there were a lot of, I mean, you can only imagine, just a ton of religious figures throughout the entire list.
Oh, of course.
Because, I mean, that's the bulk of Western, like, I mean, and up until what? Just a few hundred years ago, that is what Westerners wrote about almost exclusively.
Right. You know? Or like the politics of the moment. But politics of the moment aren't going to make it to the thing.
No.
It's who's talking about big things.
Recurring figures.
People, so were there like authors?
People who keep getting
I mean,
quoted.
I guess Shakespeare made it. What about like a Walt Whitman or a, you know, who else?
No Whitman.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, surely there are other authors. Maybe an Arthur Conan Doyle in there or something. I don't know. You don't know.
I mean, you did get Presley, so you at least got a pop cultural
right
figure.
Where's Tolkien? Where's J.R.R.?
I don't know. Like I said, I couldn't actually pull up the actual list. These are just things that got cited in this article that I read.
Sure.
So.
All right. Well, there you go. Good job, Jesus. Way to win everything.
As always.
God,
I hate him. He just wins everything.
Although, he had a very poor showing at the Mr. Universe contest. He was just summarily dismissed.
Well, he needed to put a little more time into the gym.
He really did. Put in some gym time.
Just some gym time, Jesus.
It's
not that hard.
Take some time out of your schedule of...
Get some creatine.
Riding protein. Donkeys and kicking over things in temples and, you know, hit the gym a little bit.
You might be a little behind. Maybe you'll need a little chemical support. But
maybe some, you know, CrossFit. Who's more associated with a cross than him?
It's a natural.
He could start his own version of CrossFit.
You just hang on a cross,
and then you do pull-ups.
Yeah, kind of limited.
Really works
groups.
Those delts.
Yeah,
really works those delts.
So you're ripped right there.
You're ripped. Also, you might be ripped on the hands. The hands might be ripped a little bit.
Hands might actually physically rip.
Yeah. Oh, God. Jesus Christ, CrossFit, coming soon.
He's ripped.
Coming soon to a blasphemous strip mall near you. I'm going to take us to Dearborn Heights, Michigan.
I would not be surprised if there's a mega church somewhere that's like, come to our CrossFit, get CrossFit. Not actually like as an exercise thing, but they need to jump on this.
They do. They do. It's a fad. We need to jump on it. Some artist. We have artist listeners, I'm sure. Somebody
make some CrossFit.
Make
stuff.
Some CrossFit stuff or something. Do something funny. It's too bad you and I don't draw.
I know.
Or aren't illustrators of
I
any
could
sort.
Get the oils out and paint something.
A lovely pastiche. Of Jesus.
I should actually. I've got some oils in the house.
I do love the idea of Jesus in like workout clothes with his knee socks on, hanging on the cross.
Human figures I was never good at.
Well.
Yeah. It's more sort of landscapes.
Pastoral. That doesn't help us at all, Franklin.
The occasional pelican or rabbit. I don't have them in my possession, sadly. My parents still have them, but yes, these paintings exist.
I'm sure they do. I have no doubt in my mind that the rabbit...
It's a lovely rabbit, and the pelican turned out really well as well. I was like 10.
Yeah.
You know,
there you go.
9 even. I think I was only like 9.
Oh, and already doing oil.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I totally was an oils snob.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
At 9. Like, they started telling me about acrylics, and I was like, I don't want acrylics. Fuck acrylics.
Amateur hour over there.
I would do some charcoal stuff, just because it seemed pure.
Mm.
And it was really easy to work, like, do shading.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. The big secret is to not use the black charcoal. You use the brown charcoal.
Oh, really?
It's easier to work with.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, as I said, I'm going to take us to Dearborn Heights, Michigan. Dateline there.
Yeah.
A horrific thing happened. A 38-year-old woman, home alone with her special needs child.
Okay.
And there was a break-in.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds awful.
And the man came in and assaulted her.
Yeah. Okay.
but she thwarted it.
Oh, did she have a? Is this like a gun? No. Story, Dan.
No, she thwarted it by saying, "God loves you. You don't want to do this."
What?
She prayed the attacker away.
She, wow,
apparently,
okay.
Apparently she...
It's the one time it worked?
She admonished him in the name of the Lord, and he left.
So was it the Lord that... What happened? I don't understand. Did the Lord show up and get rid of him?
Sure.
An angel. I would be fine with it if it... The Lord doesn't even have to show up for these things.
I mean...
He could send an angel.
WXYZ did not report on any angel, but that doesn't mean that the angel wasn't there. So yeah. I really can't tell you what specifically
seems
did
like
or didn't happen.
A big
happen.
Omission if there was actually an angel.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. And maybe they wanted. Maybe you know. Not all of the facts of the event are out yet. But here's where I went with this in my mind. Why not start appealing to their sense of Jesus? I mean, we know for a fact that atheists. At least according to statistics, there are fewer atheists in prison populations than there are in the general population.
Yeah.
Which would lead one to conclude that there are fewer atheists committing crimes. Right. So you've got a good shot that your attacker slash intruder is a believer.
Yeah.
So go after him on it. I mean, if you have no other options, people, and you're being attacked, start calling on Jesus. Just tell them that Jesus is watching them. Jesus loves you. Jesus will forgive you if you just let me go. Please go for that. Why not? Play on their little fairy tale.
Dear Jesus, please take this attacker away. Yeah. I mean, was it that, or you have to? Like, so I thought it was a prayer thing. She was just telling him Jesus loves you.
God loves you. You don't want to do this.
That's not a prayer being answered. I thought this was a story about a prayer being answered.
You are so hung up on details. This is the same as a prayer being answered.
No, it's not.
You
have to call on God for it to be a prayer. I'm sorry, I will quibble.
You are quibbling. You are a quibbler. Anyway,
yeah.
All I'm saying is, kids, if all else fails, try appealing to their sense, because this is your attacker is likely a dopey Christian. Might as well give it a shot.
Yeah, no. Better than pulling out a gun.
Yeah, well, I don't know. If you have a gun, you might want to try that too.
Both?
Yeah.
Jesus wants you to go away.
Jesus wants you to go away. Smith and Wesson just wants you to die. Your choice. You can choose which one you want. Jesus wants you to stop attacking me. But Glock here seems to think that you should die. So there you go.
That's pretty amazing. All right. Well, here's a story about law enforcement.
Ooh, enforcing the law.
In Edmonton, Alberta.
Oh, I've been to Edmonton.
This is they have approved a special hijab uniform in advance of having anybody request one.
Oh. For the police?
For the police.
Wow.
Yes, the Edmonton Police Service, or the EPS, has decided that they would design a uniform that incorporates a hijab. Basically, a hijab is just a headscarf.
Sure.
So the female, the theoretical female police officer would wear basically a standard uniform, which already is going to cover wrists and ankles.
Sure.
There appears to be a hat that's involved already.
Okay.
And so all they've done is they've created a tight-fitting headscarf that's worn, that comes up underneath the collar of the uniform and goes up underneath the hat.
Huh.
And so that her hair can be covered.
And is the same color as the rest of the uniform?
It's a gray, just like the rest of the uniform, a dark gray.
Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, making a small step toward inclusion really isn't hard at all.
No, it doesn't seem like it should be that hard.
It's almost as if that's not really problematic.
But here's my... I do have a quibble here.
Okay.
If it's a uniform, I think it should be uniform. I think everybody should have to.
Whatever. And men and women should have to wear the same thing, too.
Well, she is already. She has a tie on. She has slacks on.
Then all of them should have to wear the headscarf, including the men.
Including the men.
I think they should
everybody
all have
across
to do
the board.
It.
This is just what the EPS uniform should be.
That's right.
That's the way to make this fair.
That's you're
and
just
truly inclusive.
Aha! I see it. You, sir, are part of the Sharia law agenda.
Yeah.
I caught you.
Yeah. Now, no, I don't feel that way. But what's interesting is this is the same nation, of course, Canada. This is happening in the same nation as the whole Quebecois thing,
right.
Where they would be saying that this would be an overt display of one's religion.
So absolutely not.
And so, no.
Unless you can wear a tiny little headscarf that no one can really see.
Right.
Well, if it's very small, then
you could wear a ring with
a headscarf
with a crescent,
right?
With a star and crescent,
right?
On.
Or a necklace with a nice
You could do something like
I
that.
I would like you to wear
as your display of faith.
I think all of my Quebec listeners, I would like you to wear a ring or necklace with a head that has a scarf on it, and that way at least you're it's a nod to.
To Islam. Yeah.
There you go.
Like, I think
that's so
think
weird.
Big...
Here's what's weird about this is that traditionally, and this is not just traditionally, this is a fact. Alberta is like conservative as all hell.
Yeah.
And Quebec is liberal as all hell. And it's gone all flippy do on us. It's like black is white and night is day.
I know.
Who knows what's going to happen up there?
Well,
it gets so cold, they just don't know which end they're, you know.
And this might be, I don't know if this, I have this understanding of Islam, right, and the hijab. The hijab is typically worn by women who, this much is definitely just sort of fact. The hijab is worn by women who are more devout.
Mm.
And if you're, but this is the part where I don't understand. If you're a devout Muslim woman,
yeah,
I always thought you aren't supposed to really have contact with like strange men and with, but a police officer doesn't get to choose how she's going to be.
It's interesting.
You know,
yeah, she has to
deployed
interact with,
out into the public.
Strange men.
Yeah.
That will be forever part of her job.
Yeah. And so I guess I don't.
Yeah.
I guess I don't fully understand I guess there are plenty of covered women who, I guess that's not really a thing. It may not be, I mean, that's maybe up for interpretation. And so some, because I have met plenty of women who are professionals. Well, not, I guess I can't say I've met plenty, but I have met women who are professionals who are covered and a professional has to engage with whomever.
Right.
So, okay.
So yeah, it'll happen. There you go. Well, from Canada, from the frigid climes of Canada, to Ireland now.
Oh?
Where the National University of Ireland in Galway, NUI Galway, go fighting Galwegians, or whatever. I don't know what their actual, if they have a mascot or whatever.
Irish?
I think they're fighting Irish. It's less their mascot and more their student body. But okay, that's fine.
Well, at least down at the local pub.
Anyway, they have banned a group from their campus. And it's not an insignificant group. The group is called the Courage Community.
Okay.
And they are linked with a group called the Legion of Mary. Now, the Legion of Mary is one of the largest Catholic groups in Ireland, and they are a big deal.
Yeah.
They've been around, for forever, and they were a huge part of the Catholic community of Ireland. And as you know, Ireland has the whole Catholic Protestant thing going on, and so, this kind of thing is a huge deal there.
Right.
Well, what they were banned, from their campus, the Courage community was. And the reason was they put up pamphlets, they put up flyers, posters all over the campus that said, in part, said a lot of things, but it was mainly about same-sex attraction, mm-hmm. i.e. a gayness. And I just hate the phrase same-sex attraction. It just sounds...
No, it's awful.
Because it's used by people to mean that you can choose not to be attracted. I don't know. It's used by hateful people, so I don't want to use it. Anyway.
SSA.
But one of the quotes on the thing, it's they're quoting, and it says, quote, "I'm a child of God. Don't call me gay."
What?
Or don't call me gay. "I'm a child of God. Don't call me gay." And I guess that it's basically saying,
is this a
universal call to all Christians. This is also from that same poster. "By developing an interior life of chastity, which is the universal call to all Christians, one can move beyond the confines of the homosexual label to a more complete identity in Christ." So don't call them gay. Okay. They're more complete than that.
Okay.
However, not at NUI Galway, where they are, you know, accepting of the queers. Hooray.
Right.
Go gays.
So they're getting rid of the group.
Get out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. I mean,
wow.
Well, yeah. Good on them.
I guess so. I mean, it seems kind of extreme to just kick them off instead of saying, hey, don't put these posters up anymore. Or these posters are not in keeping
maybe
with...
Who knows? But this maybe this been, wasn't the first
infraction of this kind. But yeah, they gave them the boot. I think the Protestant Catholic
well, is problems this Northern are Ireland flare or Ireland?
Up. No, this is in Ireland. This is in Galway. Galway is not Northern Ireland.
I thought the Catholic Protestant thing was mainly in Northern Ireland.
You think that issue. There's? Do you feel that there's a part of Ireland that doesn't remember all of the Catholic Protestant issues?
Well, I believe where it played out and was, I mean, I don't know tons about Ireland and all of that stuff, but I thought that was a...
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know enough about it to be able to say
anything. That it was more of a pushback against the Protestant English who were ruling them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that it?
Anyway, Galway is in Ireland, not Northern Ireland.
Okay.
So all the way on the other side of the island from Dublin. It's on the west side.
Ah.
Dublin's on the east.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Don't you come after our gays in Galway, that's for sure.
Don't.
Yeah.
Good on them.
Yeah.
They are standing up
for
and kicking them out.
They are.
Get the bastards out of here. Those Catholic bastards.
Yep. You won't be persecuting my Michael. He's a good boy and I love him. Do you understand? You leave my Michael out of it. I don't care if he's gay. Anyway.
That's fantastic.
So there you go. Well, if you want your Michael to not be persecuted and you'd like to tell us about it,
you can do that.
You can do it. You can call us.
You can call us.
Sure.
The phone number is 424-666-8442.
Right. Or you can email us, podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you can go to facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
Absolutely.
You can like us. You can also find these stories. They'll be posted throughout the week.
Indeed.
And you can continue the conversation there. You can comment on the stories as they pop up.
Angrily excoriate us for whatever dumb thing we said this week. You can do all sorts of things there.
I'm surprised people still listen to us. Because people hate us.
No. No, most of them like us. Only a few of them hate us. We get so little hate mail. We just pay it way more attention than the rest.
Oh, I know.
Anyway.
All right. So we have a quick break that we're going to take. It's a Pat Robertson break.
We love Patty Boy.
He's a fun one.
And he's dispensing valuable advice. This, you pointed out earlier, the only point of his show that anyone should ever watch is when they break off onto the advice section and he goes off script.
Yeah, you don't want the rest of the show.
The rest of the show's scripted. You don't need that.
You want him just shooting.
Just shooting from the hip. Yeah,
he's just going.
Seat of his pants flying, baby, and it is glorious.
All right, well, here we go.
Okay, this is Melody, who says, what is God's view on divorce? All of my marriages failed. I tried really hard to make them work, but the last husband wouldn't work or pay the bills, and the guy before him was an alcoholic. Will I go to hell if I marry again? Will I be classified as an adulteress?
You know, there was a woman that Jesus met at the well. She was an outcast, and he said, go call your husband. She said, I don't have a husband. He said, you've spoken right. You've had 500 husbands. The guy you're living with now isn't your husband. And on the strength of that, she went and began to evangelize. Come see the man who told me everything I ever did. So he didn't condemn her. But in answer to your question, you've got a serious problem. And I don't think marriage is for you. You have picked a selection of losers. There's something in your character that draws you to these men who are indigent or abusive. Mm-hmm. You don't need to get married again. Are you going to go to hell? No, but you're making your own hell here on earth. And I don't think you're marriage material. And what about the reasons for these marriages to be broken up? You didn't tell me any of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether it was adultery, unfaithfulness, abuse. There's so many things that go on. But just for now, forget marriage. Work out a life for yourself. Mm-hmm. All right?
Get close to the Lord.
Get close to the Lord. Amen.
Wow. Not marriage material.
Yeah, just quit marrying people. I mean, he was this close to saying, you dumb bitch. He wanted to. That guy is awesome. It's like, and what's amazing is that, like, at the end there, he gets into like something that might be good. Like,
there's a little nugget right at the very end. Yeah.
Work on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't focus on these men. Get yourself right.
Right.
That is actually
brilliant.
Good.
That's exactly what she needs to do. However,
insulting her along the way may not be the right way.
Getting there via you're not marriage material.
This poor woman.
Oh, you wrote to the wrong guy.
I mean,
lady.
Clearly. I mean, you hear her email. She did pick a string of deadbeats.
Right.
She doesn't have to say it. You think that, Pat. You don't say it.
No, he gets to say all of this. We need to start writing letters to him.
Oh, God.
We need to start making up scenarios and writing letters to him just so that we can try and get him to talk about certain things.
Oh, that's fairly brilliant.
Pretty good. Yeah. I encourage all of you, by the way, listening, to think of some scenario that you think his response might be brilliant. And the thing is that you've got to write it as though it's completely sincere.
Oh, you cannot, like, embed anything.
He can't smell any snark or laughter or Mm-mm. any kind of wink.
Mm-mm.
None of that. You just got to write it straight.
Got to get in the character. And
right.
And then you write it.
And then you hope.
You don't betray that character.
Mm-mm.
You just write it.
And then but you got to think of the thing that you want, that only Pat Robertson talking about this
right.
would come up with something crazy. Oh, this is good. I promise you, if you write to us,
we can't be the first ones to come up with this, though.
No,
somebody has come up with this. Somebody's priority doing it, because some of these letters are outrageous.
we got to get some of our people in on this. I love it. Well, we had some folks write to us,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is very lovely of them.
Mm-hmm.
I approve of that. We got an email from Becky, who echoed the a few people when she wrote. She was talking to us about, you know, we did report on the Temple of Satan people, who are trying to get the Satanic monument in Oklahoma City up next to the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And she said that. That she heard an interview with the leader of the Church of the Temple of Satan on The Thinking Atheist, which is a podcast with Seth Andrews.
Yes.
And that they that he copped to being more of a bunch of atheists sort of with a devilish sense of humor than being actual Satanists.
Okay.
I read a very interesting interview with the leader of that group on Vice. It was actually very eye opening, and he talked about how they now use Satan, they actually like use him metaphorically as someone who rejected sort of the authority of God and went out on his own and thought for himself, and those are the virtues that they espouse, and they use him as a metaphor, as a metaphorical figure, so that they can truly say that Satan is the center of their religion,
right?
So there's some legitimacy there, I would say, but I would also say this: when people talk about this thing happening, and you have the impulse to say, "Well, they're not real Satanists," shut the hell up. This is working for us. Shh. Be quiet about that. We want the people to worry about them. This works better if everybody's right. afraid of them.
If it doesn't get out.
Right.
You don't want your good Christian neighbor to be like, oh, but they're not real Satanists.
Right, right. We don't want that getting around.
Now, they are doing the devil's work, but they aren't real Satanists. I don't know then. Maybe they are.
Well, maybe the Lord's working through them, or is the devil working through them? I cannot tell.
That devil... He sure is clever.
Yeah, but the Lord works in mysterious ways, so I don't know.
Does the Lord want the Ten Commandments removed? I'm confused.
Does the devil work in mysterious ways? Is the Lord the devil?
They both work in mysterious ways.
I don't know how to tell the difference between them, frankly. Anyway, thanks, Becky, for writing into that to us about that.
Absolutely.
Jason wrote in, this one's... We have talked about this, but you'll hear why I wanted to talk about it. Jason wrote in and said, "Hi, guys. My wife and I love your podcast. A very quick background on myself. I was quite religious from childhood until about age 17. Was agnostic for a long time and now finally atheist at age 35. Congratulations, by the way, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
He says, a friend of mine died suddenly over the weekend, and I find myself lacking the old comfort of thinking they're in a better place now. What has worked for you or your listeners in times like this?"
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about grieving as an atheist.
Right.
But it's true. You lose that thing. You lose the ability to think to yourself, they're in a better place now. But I submit to you, Jason, that you don't, that is actually kind of cold comfort, even to the believers.
Yeah.
Because the fact remains that your entire time on this earth will be without your loved one.
Right.
And one way or another, you're going to have to come to terms with that fact.
Right.
Doesn't matter where that other is. He or she is not with you.
Right.
And that's what you have to cope with at this point.
Well, and I think also remembering that comfort is like, especially Mormons. Mormons do it better than anybody, right? I think. Because like a Mormon funeral is like, nobody cries. Nobody's really that upset. You know what I mean? Like, there are some tears.
But... I went to a Mormon funeral where the stake president, who's a, you know, sort of a what you would call a bishop in any other kind of church setting, got up and actually said, "It's okay to cry."
But isn't that remarkable that he has to give permission
to say that to
a group of Mormons? Because it's sort of it's instilled within Mormon culture that you're just supposed to be happy that they've moved on.
Right. They're right. with the Lord now, so what could possibly be sad?
And that's all they focus on. Because it's like a betrayal of the eternal family.
Right.
Right. This faith in the eternal family, that if you're sad right now, no, because you're going to be together again.
Right.
You're going to be together again, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, so nobody does it better than the Mormons, but it is true that there's this comfort that comes from it. But the problem is, in my mind, that you never deal with the real stark reality of it. You never actually confront loss. You never confront this person's death. You just push it off.
Right.
And so there's
You're
these unresolved psychological issues you know,
that are going to haunt you.
Absolutely.
And you're never going to get past them. Never going to really deal with them unless you do.
And it's another sort of cold comfort, but I always just try to focus on the sort of the human condition and to marvel at sort of our state, right? Mm. To marvel at where we are, sort of our place in the universe, our place in nature, as just kind of a way to contemplate sort of the cyclical nature of the whole thing, right? Like, it doesn't really comfort, but it gives you something to process.
Well, I think. And of course, one doesn't want to sound like we're drawing on cliche, but the truth is, it now is a good time to celebrate this person's life.
Think about the best. Yeah.
To you know, search yourself for the things in you that are made better by your interaction with that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where their legacy lives.
Right.
Their legacy does not live in a made-up place where Jesus is. Their legacy lives in how they impacted you. And if you can magnify that part of you, you are honoring them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can think about the things that you loved about that person and maybe incorporate a little bit more of that into you, that's the best way you could honor a fallen friend, I think. So I don't know how helpful that is. We're not psychiatrists or psychologists.
But
I get you.
Things that have worked for us.
Yeah.
You know.
And Jason, I would say this too. Find a good secular therapist.
Yeah.
Someone who can, I mean, if you're grieving and you want help with that grieving, that's an awesome thing to do.
Yeah.
Really smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
especially if you're having a hard time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, just, you know, good luck to you.
Yeah.
We go through these hard times and we don't have the fairy tales that some people find comforting.
Yeah.
But I think that reality can be much more fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, reality for me, once I gave up religion, was so much more fulfilling.
Yeah.
And so much more, even the hard stuff, even the really hard stuff, just made me feel more appreciative of what I've got and more appreciative of where I am. Mm-hmm. And the fact that even though all of this is random, I get to live this random crazy life. I love that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Sorry for your loss.
Yep. Thanks for writing. We have a voicemail, do we not?
We do. Let's see. Let me pull that up. We have a voicemail from Sparkle Darkle Pony.
Oh, hey, Sprinkle Diggle.
He's chiming in about a story that we talked about last week with the Hopi, who are trying to prevent an auction of their sacred masks in Paris.
Right.
And he had sort of something to point out.
And we had talked about how legit or non-legit
their claim,
the Hopi claim, is that they need to return the masks right away.
Exactly. So here's what he had to say about that.
Hey, Frank and Dan, Sparkle Duck Bunny. I listened to the story about the no hope for the Hopi, and I just realized something as you guys are talking through the story. They're saying that the Hopi would not have given up the artifacts unless it was done communally. Does that or does that not smell completely of the fallacy of, and I'm sorry, I'm driving, trying to remember what it was, no true hobby. No individual would have sold it because we don't sell it that way. You would have to do it communally. Tell me that doesn't smell. I'm sympathetic for their stuff, but at the same time, if it was sold legit, it's legit. Have a good holiday season, guys. Stay safe out there and warm. Bye-bye.
What he's referring to, of course, is the what's known in philosophical circles as an informal fallacy called no true Scotsman, or in this case, no true Hopi,
right?
Which is the fallacy that, you know, nobody in our group would ever actually do this. Therefore, it never got did.
Right,
and of course, there's far too many variables for that ever to be a logical statement.
Right, but even if one person went out against the wishes of the larger group and sold some stuff to make gain because right. maybe they were just, you know, for whatever reason that they did it. I don't know. Like, do you need to still honor the larger group?
I mean,
you know,
the sell might
have been legitimate, and that's the tough part.
Yeah.
Because if the sell was legitimate, like if it was true, there was an exchange that took place, according to our system, you know, according to our traditions,
yeah.
then it's legitimate. But maybe for the Hopi, that transaction is just as perverse and immoral as anything else.
Doesn't matter. I mean, it's just tricky. It's tricky. But yeah, the French are certainly not going to.
Mais non.
Mais non.
All right. Then we have another voicemail. Do you want to move on to the next voicemail?
Sure. Yeah.
This one is coming from Ryan. And this is about the war on Christmas and the Christians. Oh, this is about, we were talking about last week, sort of, this is in reference to the Bill O'Reilly.
Right.
Voicemail.
Yeah.
Or not voicemail, but clip that we played.
Yep.
And so it's probably pretty self-explanatory.
Hey, Frank and Dan. This is Ryan from beautiful Massachusetts. I just wanted to comment on the most recent audio you listened to about Billo the Clown talking about the war on Christmas yet again. I'm sure this is a point that has been made thousands of times before, but I just wanted to vocalize it to someone who would listen. Until you're getting thrown into coliseums to fight lions and bears, Christians just don't have the right to claim themselves as being oppressed anymore. I think we're all just kind of sick of hearing that. The second point I wanted to make is I wanted to thank you for opening my eyes to the religion of Seinfeld. For years, I have just been muddling through the parking garage of uncertainty until finally Kramer showed me the way with his beautiful air conditioning unit. So I just wanted to say thanks, keep up the good work, and have a good day, guys.
Well, thank you, Ryan.
What's the deal with that?
I'm not sure that I would put the threshold for oppression at being fed to bears and lions, though.
do you think there's a happy medium there?
I think there's something before that that actually qualifies as oppression, but I get your point. Absolutely.
Although, I think Bill O'Reilly could take a lion. I want to see it happen. I think he's a big guy.
He's a tall one.
Maybe we can declaw the lion just to sort of make it fair.
Make it fair. Yeah.
And then
give him some claws.
Right.
Give Bill something.
Give Bill something.
Not a knife. And he has a knife.
Maybe something. I don't know. Knife might
be not little guy.
Like
little
a
dagger.
Pocket knife. A little Swiss Army thing.
Yeah.
And not
like a sword.
And then you know, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean,
he's scrappy.
Now, here's what I will say. In this country, no Christian can claim oppression.
Yes, and you're about to bring up a good point.
Because there are plenty of places. Yeah. You're Egypt.
Yeah.
You know, you're Middle Eastern countries.
If you're a Coptic.
Yeah. You can claim Christian. That you are an oppressed Christian.
Yeah.
And I'll buy it.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're absolutely right that in this country, hell no, you can't say you oppressed.
And that really is what the war on Christmas is all about.
Right.
So, yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. What are we going to talk about? We are going to talk about a bombshell.
Yeah. This is an interesting thing, like a development.
Right.
In the Mormon Church's own acknowledgement of their history.
Right.
About the ban on blacks in the priesthood.
Should we explain
that a little bit?
We should, but before we get into that, I wanted to just say this, because I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, we hear a lot of people ask, or a few people have asked, why we're so focused on Mormonism and stuff. I've been thinking a lot about that, because I get sometimes a little hesitant to bring up Mormonism as much as we do.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing about Mormonism that I think is brilliant. We're watching a religion unfold.
Yeah.
This is like being in in the year 110 mm-hmm. and seeing Christianity.
Right.
This is like being, I mean, this, we are right there as it's unfolding.
We can trace it from cult status to kind of a cult to kind of a weird thing.
Right. Regardless of your and my previous affiliation, Frank, I feel like there's something great about talking about Mormonism because it is unique in the fact that we are watching the twists and turns of an early religion, which has done it. It's made it past cult status. It has exploded
right.
in size. And it's still trying to make its way in the world.
And some would say that it still has aspects of that cult in it.
I would say we're dealing with an adolescent religion.
Yeah. Because getting your head out of it is a really tricky and difficult thing.
Yes.
And I think that's where people, the psychological effect that it has on you is where people still like want to call it a cult.
Sure.
And all right, fine. If you want to, that's great. But like, it's clearly now sort of more so into the mainstream,
much more mainstream and
desperately wants to be mainstream.
Don't look at the early history, please.
Well, finally they're letting go a little bit of that.
Yeah, I know. So, early history, just some background on Mormonism and, black folks.
Yeah.
Didn't always get along too good. The founder of the Mormon Church, Joseph Smith,
mm-hmm.
actually did ordain a couple of men of African descent
mm-hmm.
into the priesthood of Mormonism.
Yes.
So that's a big deal. And then the second president of the church, the second prophet of the Mormon Church, summarily said, we're not doing that anymore. We're decidedly not going to do that ever anymore at all, period.
Right. End of story. And that decree, that policy, continued until 1978. Yes.
They wouldn't let... So black people couldn't go into the temples. Black people couldn't do, like, couldn't... Black men couldn't get the priesthood. Black men and women couldn't do temple ceremonies. It was a distinct line.
Yes.
Now, that line started to get muddy.
Mm-hmm.
When they started to proselytize to, say, the Pacific Islands, mm-hmm. where folks are brown, mm-hmm. but not quite black.
Right. Or Australia, the Aborigines.
Right. We're starting to get really, really sketchy here because... Right.
Because it was no longer just about the skin tone.
Right. And the problem is that the foundational argument for denying black people the priesthood and denying black people access to the temple was based on scripture, which talked about the mark of Cain
right.
in the Bible. That's blackness
right.
comes from Cain being cursed by God.
Right.
And then on our lovely continent, mm-hmm. in the Book of Mormon, the discussion of the Lamanites who
loathsome.
They were bad, dirty, bad people. And they
bore the mark.
They were marked. They were marked with darkness.
See, they weren't fully sort of.
They didn't go full black.
No.
It was more of a really ruddy brown.
Oh, God.
Anywho, all of this was how they justified not allowing black people into several of their most sacred rites
exactly.
and rituals.
Yeah.
And it was pretty bad. I mean, it literally, you would hear people talk about, so there was a Mormon scripture. There was a scripture in the Book of Mormon that talked about how one group was dark and loathsome unto the Lord, and one group was white and delightsome.
White and delightsome.
That's the quote.
Yep.
And so they clung to that.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty pleased with that.
But then they did. When did they change white to light?
No, to pure.
It's pure?
It's pure and delightsome now. They changed that. And it was in the 80s.
It was in the 80s that they
So it was post. So if you get a new Book of Mormon, you will not find the phrase white and delightsome. You have to go
maybe
to
some footnotes.
I don't even think it's there. I think they expunged it completely. Matter of fact, even the header, recently, the header was changed. So that
it no longer referred to that chapter,
doesn't even refer to like the color or whatever. They've been changing it incrementally over the years.
Right.
So
let's get to the juicy stuff though. This
There's this history.
Yes.
Right? And then they changed their policy in 1978. And this is what's important, is that how did the church deal with the issue of race post-1978?
Mm-hmm.
And they always had this difficulty because they would talk about, like, Joseph Smith and how he spoke out against slavery, right? And but they would just kind of, there were all these, like, weird stories that, like, and theories and fake doctrines of sorts that would kind of just emerge to kind of explain,
right,
why there was this era of the blacks not being able to have the priesthood.
And what was so, yeah, because people would rightly ask questions about this policy.
Right.
Like, well, what about this guy? I know that Cain was a big dick, but my buddy George over here, he's done nothing wrong. He accepts Jesus and loves God and blah, 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 blah. He's already been baptized. Why, what about him? Why can't he receive the priesthood? What did he do?
Right.
So then popped up the the theory
that being unworthy in the
that they were less valiant in heaven
in the pre-existence.
There was a pre-existence and there was a war in heaven.
Right.
And the good guys fought against Satan and the bad guys, Lucifer.
And this is an important Mormon doctrinal thing. We've talked about it way, way, way early on in the history of our podcast.
Right.
And it's the idea of the pre-existence. And we should probably, just for people who didn't go back and listen to everything, Mormons believe that we all existed in spirit form before coming to the earth.
Oh, yeah.
That we were ourselves, that we were an identity, that so forth and so on, and that we chose the right side to be on in the war in heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, because the war in heaven isn't like, you have like the whole fallen angels.
And right.
That's what it's sort of based on.
A third of the angels went with Lucifer.
Yeah.
And now they're the demons. I think those are the Thetans that were put into the volcano and that are now inhabiting our bodies.
Ooh, you're doing kind of a fusion, a Mormon Scientology fusion religion.
Wow, sounds good. Cool. Yeah, right. Sounds good. Crossing the streams again.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this has long been troubling stuff.
Right.
Especially now that, like, everybody pretty much accepts that, you know, racial equality is a good thing.
Right.
Yeah. And that maybe the racism of the past might have been bad.
Right, yeah.
So
how do we explain how if we now accept this, if this is how God clearly must have always wanted it, if this is where we've gotten to today,
yeah.
How do we explain this moment when God wasn't good with it, or when at least he wasn't chiming up about the issue?
Yeah.
Well, the Mormons have now kind of an explanation.
And they've released this sort of quietly. They just popped up a little thing on their website, the part of their website that's all about, like, you know, teaching. It's all reference material for how you teach your Sunday school class or
exactly.
whatever.
Yeah.
And they popped up this little article called Race and the Priesthood. And I'll be goddamned if that thing doesn't have a very honest discussion of the history of racism in the church.
Yeah. Actually acknowledging racism and acknowledging that racism was the issue.
And acknowledging it as racism.
Yeah. His issue was that he was a racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the basis of this policy of the church for, what, 100 and some odd years was that is that Brigham Young was a racist. And all the following prophets didn't know how to deal with it. And a lot of them were racist, too.
So you have to understand, like, the context for this is that Mormon people are meant to believe what their prophet says.
Yeah.
You are meant to follow the prophet. Mm-hmm. It's not...
There's a primary hymn about that.
There is. There is a hymn that children sing from the day you're born. About following the prophet. But the trick is that, like, I mean, Mormons have never said, have never used the word infallible for their prophets and their general authorities.
That's fair. That's true.
But what they do use is intense social pressure to not question what the prophet says.
Right.
And if the prophet said it, then it's true. And if it's said from the pulpit, it may not be scripture, but it's basically, I mean, the common understanding is you might as well take it as scripture.
Right. So basically what they've done is
by
identifying it as just Brigham Young's racism.
And racism of men thereafter.
They've basically stricken it as doctrine.
Not only have they stricken it.
As almost as it ever having been doctrine.
I'm going to read a quote here. This is from LDS.org. Today, the church disavows the theories advanced in the past that black skin is a sign of divine disfavor or curse, or that it reflects actions in a premortal life, that mixed-race marriages are a sin, or that blacks or people of any other race or ethnicity are inferior in any way to anyone else.
Yeah.
People, this statement is huge. Yeah. Matter of fact, I'm going to have to go East Coast on this. It's huge. I'm not even going to pronounce the H. Okay. That's how big it is.
Wow.
It's huge.
Well, yeah.
Because what it means is that now, I mean, okay, most Mormons by this point, and I'm going to only say most Mormons have gotten over the black thing and are now not horrendously awful racist. Most of them are passively racist in some small way.
Sure.
But aren't we all?
Right.
Not as much as them, but aren't we all?
Right.
But to say all of these things that Brigham Young, who, believe me, is held up there and on as high a pedestal as you can find.
Right.
To say that, oh, no, that was just bullshit. What he was spouting, that was just some nonsense.
Well, the problem is they've had to do this before with Brigham Young. Like, Brigham Young, doctrinally, was a nightmare for the LDS Church.
Oh, yeah.
For the modern LDS, for the late 20th century and now the 21st century LDS Church, Brigham Young is a total quagmire. Like, you start getting into some of his teachings about blood atonement the Adam God theory and so forth and so on. These are things that colloquially Mormons will call space doctrine.
Right. Right.
Because it's just totally out there, and you don't really want to get into space doctrine. You don't want to really look at it because it's just so crazy and nutty.
Well, and the truth is that they don't know what to do with it.
Right.
Because they're still supposed to believe what the prophets
say. Because he's the prophet.
He's a prophet, but obviously it doesn't jive with what they're... Don't talk about it.
Right.
Right. We're not going to chat about
that. So it's doctrine, but it's not doctrine that anybody talks about.
Right. Or it's not canonized doctrine. And Mormon intellectuals will make that distinction.
Yeah.
Mormon non-intellectuals don't have the language to make that distinction.
Right.
So, like, there's most Mormons either just don't know about it.
Right.
And don't want to hear about it. They literally don't. They want to bury their head in the sand about this stuff.
Right.
Or they just are baffled.
Yeah. But here's a piece that the church has now made easy for them.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten rid of it.
It's so amazing. So what this means, if the church has come out and said, all this stuff that was said by all of these leaders that you are meant to accept is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what?
Any of it can be not true.
All of it. Unless it is canonized. And there is stuff that is canonized in the structure of things. Like the word of wisdom, which is their dietary restrictions, was not meant to be doctrine.
No.
It was an idea. It was a good idea. We probably should eat a little less meat and no coffee and no hot drinks.
It wasn't until like the 1920s, right?
That it became
a requirement to get into the temple.
Right.
Right? Something like that.
It's now canonized.
Yeah.
It's now part of doctrine.
Right.
Well, this now throws all of this on its head. It doesn't matter how many of these guys have come out and said that gay marriage is bad and that homosexuality is wrong.
Right.
I got news for you. You get to question that now.
Do you, though?
In a deeper way than you've ever gotten to do. I think so.
It does open the door a little bit to that.
I think it opens it a lot. The church has not only said, because up until now,
right.
What the church has said is, we know now that blacks can get the priesthood.
Right.
But, you know, maybe it was a product of the time, and, you know, we learn these things line upon line and precept upon precept, and you know, maybe the Lord chose that moment to get rid of it, and the Lord wanted, you know, maybe the church needed acceptance in that time period, and blah, blah, blah. There were all of these excuses and all right. these things. Now the church says, we disavow all of it.
Right.
Every bit of it we disavow. I think disavowing is a big fucking deal.
Right, except for how sort of quietly this was done.
Yeah, except
you
that,
know what I mean?
Except
I mean,
that everyone picked it up.
Sure. I mean, it definitely has been talked about. Mormons will probably be talking about it. But I just think that the fallback stance will always be listen to your leaders.
Absolutely.
Listen to the prophet.
Absolutely.
You know, because when they say things like he won't lead you astray,
mm-hmm.
right? They what they're saying is God will not punish you for doing what the prophet is currently teaching or telling you.
They are saying that. They're also right. saying
and
that...
that's key. You have to remember that they're really big on, am I going to get into the celestial kingdom?
Right. They need to know the technicalities of yeah. this.
And so they're going to follow the safe place to be spiritually.
Right.
You know, your salvation is safe if you follow the current prophet.
Now, absolutely.
Things might change down the line, but that's not for you. That's for the prophet.
Right. But what I'm saying is that...
That's where Mormons will be.
This absolutely. Oh, I don't disagree with you. There will be some Mormons who will... their minds will start expanding because of this.
Yeah.
But largely,
that's been opened up. If right. if you have a rational mind...
Right.
Right. Like, if you can think this through, I absolutely agree with you. That has been opened up. I'm just trying to take the position of, like, your average, you know, yeah, Taylorsville Mormon.
Yeah.
You know... Where are they with this? Well, it's still go to General Conference, listen to the prophet, and try to enact whatever he's currently saying.
And do whatever he says, and don't...
And will women get the priesthood someday? That's not for me to say. Will we figure out the gay issue?
But we don't need the priesthood, and blah, blah, blah. They will stay with whatever's happening right now, yes.
I know where I stand on the gay issue, right? right? Because that's what these Mormons are having to do at this point.
Right.
Because they've got the gay nephew, or the lesbian... daughter or whatever, right? There's someone in their family who's gay, and they're dealing with it,
right?
And by and large, colloquially, most of them are just kind of just quietly accepting that yeah. that's their new reality.
Well, but they still doctrinally believe that their gay nephew and their lesbian daughter are going to hell. Not hell, Mormon hell, which doesn't really count as hell, but aren't going to get...
And
but
they can
being
have
sinful.
Problems with that. They can have problems with that.
Right.
But they can have faith that it's going to work itself out.
It'll all make sense in the end. They will they don't have to understand in this life,
right.
because they will understand everything
well,
in the
as
next
as my mom
life.
Always says, it'll be worked out during the millennium. Oh, no, that'll be worked out in the millennium. Anything you ever raise... You know, like, well, what about so-and-so with all of their, you know, temple marriages or so-and-so this or, this weird little bit of, like, Mormon whatever. And they're like, she's always just like, oh, that'll be worked out in the millennium.
Right.
That's what those 1,000 years are for, she always says. That's why he's giving us 1,000 years. It's to figure out.
All of those things.
All these things.
Right.
Because the earth will be as an Urim and Thummim.
Right.
And we will have all the answers.
Right, right. All you have to do is look down at a rock, and it will tell you everything you need to know about what's happening. I love, by the way, I'm going to, this release by the church has all of these things. It mentions things like, well, Brigham Young even said that one day people of African descent will have all of the same rights and privileges, and even more.
And even more, yeah, more. That's the part I'm uncomfortable with.
And
does that mean that the whites will be enslaved?
Yeah, it says they quote him as saying they will have all the privilege and more enjoyed by other members. Now I went to their source material on that particular
Dan,
thing.
Just trust how it's being presented.
One should just trust
that's what not only
but
the Lord.
But that sounded a little, I was a little skeptical of that claim because the fact that, you know, he was down with slavery and he was...
down with?
Yeah.
He loved it.
Well, I don't know that he loved it, but he certainly made Utah a slave territory and all of that stuff. So I went to the source material, which is a very difficult to read. I finally found a PDF of the Deseret News, the old newspaper, that reprinted this speech by him. Oh boy, he was not really saying that the church would just grant it to the. He literally was saying, one day, all of the Africans and all of the Native Americans and all of these sad, sad, dark people will cast off their skin of darkness. Literally, cast off their skin of darkness.
What?
And also, they will all start speaking the same language.
Oh,
and when that
yeah.
has finally happened,
I'm looking forward to that.
Then we'll all be one.
Mm.
And that's when
we can all be pasty together.
We can all be pasty English talking motherfuckers.
Because clearly it was English. That...
Oh yeah, that's obviously the language that we're going to be speaking. Oh my god! It is such. You have to understand, like the racism. I mean, racism was rampant in that time. Right. I understand that it's a product of its time. But just the way they talk about this is so alarming. And the great thing is that he actually brings up the question of, like, you know, why may not, he says, quote, but why may not the saints be saved abroad among the nations as well as at home and among themselves? His answer, because God has not so ordained it. Oh, well, why may not the people be saved by believing and acting upon many different faiths and creeds and blah, blah, blah? Because God has not so ordained it.
That's clearly.
So why haven't the black people gotten their white pretty skin yet?
God hasn't ordained it yet.
Just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Sorry, black people.
And it didn't happen. Like, you would think that when do you think Kimball, back in 1978...
Oh,
he was the president of the church who lifted the ban.
Right.
Spencer
Kimball.
Spencer W. Kimball. Do you think he expected the black people to turn white?
I got your Kimball right here. I really do.
Oh, no.
A speech that Kimball himself gave in October of 1960.
I'm terrified.
In which he was talking about this glorious program that the church had been participating in, which took... Native American children
mm-hmm.
out of the homes of the of their ancestors of their actual families,
right,
and placed them lovingly with Mormon families so that they could be taught good things.
That does seem to be the right thing to do.
Australian listeners, any of this sounding familiar to you guys? So then they placed them with these Mormon families, taught them the gospel, and then they were so beautiful and you know, some of them even went out as missionaries. And well, let me find the quote. He said, now Lamanite in Mormon speak is code for American Indian.
Right.
For Native American.
Right.
So he says, the day of the Lamanites has come. The Indians of this country, particularly of the Southwest, have many blessings which are theirs today, but which were not theirs yesterday. Government agencies, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. The dark clouds are dissipating.
Oh.
Whereas only a decade... Oh, come on. Where's the quote? Where's the good stuff?
It's pretty good so far.
It is pretty good. But there's... Oh, here we go. For many years, they have been growing delightsome, and they are now becoming white and delightsome, as they were promised. In this picture of the 20 Lamanite missionaries, 15 of the 20 were as light as Anglos.
Oh, dear.
Five were darker, but equally delightsome. Oh, my God.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
Equally delightsome. Well, it's good that they could be equally... someone with darker skin could be equally delightsome.
Because, you know, they were for so long, they were so not delightsome. You don't want to be ungenerous with them. One doesn't want to be mean. But, oh, did you see them? They were just so not delightsome. Ugh.
I know.
But they're getting that way.
They are starting to get that way.
And if they're not... But they're getting that way. Mm. They'll be there someday.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Someday.
Good.
He actually went on to say, you know, he talked about a little girl, 16, sitting between the dark father and mother, and it was evident that she was several shades lighter than her parents. On the same reservation, in the same hogan, subject to the same sun and wind and weather, these young members of the church are changing to whiteness and delightsomeness.
And to be clear, we are talking about the 1970s.
Well, this was 60.
This was 60.
1960.
1960.
Yeah, we're not going back to 1840 here,
no,
people.
No.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. So it would just be a natural progression. Like each generation would get a couple shades lighter.
Sure.
Due to the righteousness of their parents.
Although you'd think that they could have hurried that along if they had just allowed interracial marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
they didn't well, for the longest
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
But now it's okay. Church members.
Well, but also, let's face it. It's not just like the genes that make one white are going to like be perfectly dominant.
Are
going
right? to win. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like... there's going to be some shades shifting both directions.
Well, and the other thing is that it's a good thing that they came out with this because back in the day, back in Brigham Young's day, he literally said a drop of Canaanite blood was enough to keep you from all of the temple things.
Oh, my God.
And like, you couldn't marry a white person if you had that drop of Canaanite blood.
Oh, my God.
Of course, they didn't have the genetic testing to really... determine where that
exactly.
drop. Do you have the drop in you? I'm taking your word for it. Brother Jones, do you have the drop of Canaanite blood? Okay, you can marry her.
Okay, good.
Well, that's where we stand. You know, we got Mormons that can plausibly ask questions.
Yeah.
Of the doctrine that
Even
they're being
I,
presented.
I will say I still don't think that's
gonna It's not going to happen.
In larger numbers.
Oh, no. None of my in-laws are going to be like, well, hey, maybe gay marriage is okay.
But nonetheless, you should bring this issue up with them.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just be like, hey, did you hear about what the church's stance?
Did you guys read that?
On this whole thing?
That was kind of amazing.
Do you read the Peggy Fletcher stack?
Yeah, I would love to hear what my father-in-law... Everything's a little touchy with my father-in-law right now, so I don't know that I'll bring it up with him, but I would love to hear what he has to say about it. Because that man has some racism in him.
Can you just wear a body mic when you do it?
I know, right? No, I cannot do that.
No eavesdropping?
I want to.
Come on.
Just to document history more than anything. Anyway... Well, there you go. Tell your Mormon friends, no more hating on the black folks.
Yeah.
They can probably still hate on Indians a little bit. On the Lamanites, just a little bit.
No,
okay,
they're,
fine.
They're
no
blossoming.
More racism. No
the,
racism
The Lamanites
at all.
Will blossom as a rose.
No. And no, they've disavowed all of that. They can stay Lamanite as much as they want.
Are you sure? This wasn't about the Lamanites. This was about... African Americans,
and that's what's amazing,
or people of African descent, because it didn't, it went all the way back to
specifically
Africa.
Black Africans.
Yeah,
not so much your, you know, your northern sort of white Africans. None of the Middle Eastern Africans.
Mm.
Not, you know, your Egyptians might be able to get away with it, but a black African, no deal.
Dear God, no.
Dear God, no. All right. Well, I would like to disavow. All racism on our podcast as well.
Yeah.
If we've ever been racist on our podcast, we now officially disavow it.
It never happened.
It didn't. It might as well have not happened.
It never, ever happened. Well, I don't think... Well, neither of us is racist. Like
no.
you said that... Like you said before, I mean...
We might make some racist jokes every now and then.
Well, yeah. Things might slip out because, let's face it, they're not actually grounded in any kind of, like, racism.
Right.
But they're sort of modes of speech.
Are you saying we say things that we don't believe sometimes?
No.
Because I'm saying that.
I'm saying that, well, that's possible too, but I'm saying that when you have parents who still are mildly racist, and there are patterns to their speech, right?
Yeah.
That you learned growing up.
Sure.
Maybe one has not fully gotten rid of all of them, as one probably should have already done.
Expunged all of the...
But to be fair, you don't always hear it.
Right.
And so sometimes things do slip out.
Yep.
Anyway. And they weren't meant in any kind of bad way.
I think you're all delightsome whether you're light or not. White needn't be a part of your delightsomeness.
No.
According to TGAA policy.
Now you can just be...
Delightsome. Or you can be a big dick. I don't know. Whatever.
No.
Don't be a dick.
Be delightsome.
Be delightsome. Go out. Go ye therefore and be delightsome, all y'all.
All right. And if you'd like to chime in about how delightsome you are, you can leave us a voicemail at 424-666-8442.
Sure. We'd love to hear from some of our black listeners about this stuff. That would be interesting.
That would be really interesting.
A nice response from some black listeners. Yeah. You can also just write to us at podcast@thankgodimatheist.com.
Or you can go to facebook.com/TGIAtheist.
You can indeed.
You can like us there. Mm-hmm. We're up to tons of likes. Mackenzie's always doing new posts.
Yeah, we're getting stuff out there.
So there's always good stuff happening with that.
Yep.
So
thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, and thanks, of course, to the Red Rock Hot Club for letting us use their music.
And
thank you, Mackenzie.
Get out there and do something delightsome for yourself.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.